Welcome to Aurelius Whitlock's Murder Museum.
Hi, I'm Marcus Richardson.
And I'm Nathan Hicken.
And this is Aurelius Whitlock's Murder Museum, where we tell and solve original murder mysteries. Nathan is back in the detective chair.
Woo!
Are you pumped to solve a mystery?
Oh, I'm so excited. It's been a hot second since I've been in the hot seat, so...
Before we get to that, we do need to warm up with some mini mysteries.
That's fair.
Or mini murders. I forget what we call our own segments. So Nathan, I was at Barnes & Noble and I saw this book, How to Solve a Murder, and I saw it was by our friend H.A. Ripley,
Whoa.
Who wrote a book in 1932. So I got all excited, but then I opened it up and realized it's the reprint of the book from 1932.
No way.
But they gave it a different title for a modern audience.
Oh, okay. Clever marketers.
Yeah. So it's Minute Mysteries or Detectograms. Which we've been using Project Gutenberg for because it's in the public domain. But I guess that doesn't mean other people can't sell copies of the book. So I don't know exactly who I'm supporting, but it felt right to still buy the book.
Yeah.
So I thought that we'd do some more mini murders from How to Solve a Murder / Detectograms / Mini Mysteries. This detectogram is called A Crack Shot. Both of us will be working together on this one. Professor Fordney was hunting in the Rockies when he heard of a tragedy at one of the camps. Thinking he might be of some help, he went over. Butler, the victim's friend, described the accident. What a name.
What are the odds that Butler does it?
Wow. He's being about as subtle with the naming characters as we are. Butler says, when Marshall hadn't returned to the camp at 9 o'clock last night, I was a bit worried because he didn't know these mountains. There wasn't a star out and it was dark and moonless, so I decided to look around for him. We're 5 miles from anyone, you know. I put more wood on the fire and then set out to look for him. After searching for an hour, I was coming up the slope of a ravine when I saw a pair of eyes shining out at me in the dark. I called out twice to no response, so I fired, thinking it was a mountain lion. Then I struck a match and imagined my horror when I reached the spot and saw I had nearly blown the head off Marshall. A terrible experience. That's an understatement. A terrible experience.
Nearly, so Marshall's not dead.
Let's see what happens. I carried his body back to camp. All right, he sounds dead.
No, he sounds dead.
I carried his body back to camp and then walked to the nearest house to report the accident. How far from camp did you find Marshall? Asked Professor Fordney. About a quarter of a mile. I see your right hand is bandaged. How do you manage to shoot with it? Oh, I use either hand. Mind if I look at the gun? Not at all, said Butler, handing it over. European make. Had it long? No, it's rather new. So why did you deliberately murder Marshall? Demanded Fordney abruptly. Because that's what you did.
I think I have an idea.
I think I have an idea too. I do think it's clever to like end with a whole bunch of what I assume is basically just red herring information.
Yeah. European. Twirls
European
mustache.
Like France perhaps? Also the bandage on a hand. I don't think that matters at all. All right, so what are you thinking?
I'm thinking it has something to do with the moonless night and the glowing eyes.
Yes. I don't think that human eyes glow in the dark, unless you're in a cartoon.
Especially if there's no moonlight and he's far enough away from the fire that the firelight wouldn't be reflecting in the eyes either, so...
It doesn't add up, and if we've learned anything, if it doesn't add up...
Something's
they're
wrong.
A killer. If they've lied about one thing, then everything can be thrown in the garbage.
Exactly.
All right, let's check. I feel pretty confident, so let me check in the back. It was a dark, starless, moonless night. The nearest house was 5 miles. An animal's eyes do not shine in the dark unless there is light by which they can be reflected. And a man's eyes never shine under any circumstances. Therefore, Butler could... Sorry, I'm just remembering his name is Butler. Therefore, Butler could not have possibly seen any eyes shining in the dark. It was clearly murder.
The butler did it.
Of course. And we have a little quote from Henry Wadsworth Longfellow that says, "And thy deep eyes amid the gloom shine like jewels in a shroud."
Incredible. That's my favorite part of these.
I know. I agree. I think we should do another.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Number 2, On the Scent.
Ooh.
"I couldn't wait to be announced," said George Collins, Florida's leading prohibition agent and man of great wit.
Oh, yes.
He stepped... Man, can you imagine being, like, introduced that way? This is Nathan Hicken, podcaster, man of great wit.
Yes, thank you, thank you.
I want to put that on my business cards now.
Oh, yes.
It kind of encapsulates everything I do, really. He stepped into the professor's office. "How long are you going to be in New York?" asked Fordney as he shook his friend's hand. "I'm due back in Miami now," replied Collins. "But I wanted to congratulate you on your success in the Hicks murder case. I wish interesting things like that would happen in my game. However, I did have an amusing experience last December. Sneaky Joe, a stool pigeon, tipped me off." I wonder if he's a friend of Sid Shady's.
Oh, yeah.
A stool. Remind me, what's a stool pigeon? Do you know?
Narc.
Narc. Cool, cool, cool.
Whistleblower. Someone who's selling secrets.
Gotcha. It looks like I would have gotten it with context, because up next it says, "Tipped me off to a huge alcohol still that he said was working about 40 miles from headquarters. A narrow road through dense woods led to the spot. Arriving there, I found an old dilapidated shanty screened by trees. As I entered the woods, I smelled alcohol. Sneaky Joe was right, after all," I thought, as I drove up to the shanty. I got out and peered cautiously around, but the place seemed deserted. After opening the door and entering the house, however, I knew liquor was not being made there. I searched the woods, but found nothing. As I was driving back along the road at a good rate, I discovered the alcohol I smelled was coming from my own radiator. Imagine my chagrin. The professor laughed heartily and said to his friend, "Stay over for my birthday party tonight. The ladies would love to hear that gag of yours." What did the professor find preposterous in Collins's story? All right, so no murder here, and an awful lot about alcohol, which I would say neither of us are especially expert in.
What? From the radiator?
Is that a thing?
I mean, okay, I know, here's a fun fact. I know during the Cold War, Russian pilots have antifreeze, which is made with alcohol, and so they'd... You could smuggle antifreeze off the plane and sell it like cheap vodka or something. I have no idea if that antifreeze in cars is the same thing, or if they used... What is preposterous about the story that he drove to... He trusted Sneaky Joe.
That's preposterous.
Problem number one.
Absolutely.
He smells the alcohol while he starts getting to the little shanty. Doesn't find any. But smells it coming from his car radiator.
"As he entered the woods, I smelled alcohol. Sneaky Joe's right after all, I thought, as I drove up to the shanty. He got out and peered cautiously around. The place seemed to be deserted. After opening the door and entering the house, I knew liquor was not being made there. I searched the woods, but found nothing." Is it something to do with, like, liquor is distilled, not in a way that doesn't smell, or...
Something. I'm also maybe thinking maybe Sneaky Joe put some bottles of alcohol in the guy's car and then had a drop-off person hiding in the woods, took it out of the car, and vamoosed.
But I think that what we're being told is the professor thinks the story is a lie. So I don't think that there's any funny business. Oh. I think the only funny business is that this can't be true for some reason.
It's a weird thing to tell your crime-fighting professor friend.
Yeah. "Hey, let me tell you a lie." Maybe they were testing him.
Oh.
He is a man of great wit, after all.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, here's something. He said he had an amusing experience last December.
He say he was green or something at some point?
So Miami in December, is there anything going on there?
I have not been to Miami in December, only in summer.
Is it hard to smell stuff when it's cold?
I don't know if it gets that cold, though. The smell is coming from his radiator?
Yeah. I've never heard of that before.
These are old cars, too, I guess, so.
Yeah, here's the thing. This was written in 1932, so I feel like it might be using knowledge especially available to people in the 30s, you know?
Yeah. I'm worried it's like something obvious, like, alcohol is explosive, and so if it was coming out of the radiator, the car would have blown up, obviously.
I mean, I really do feel like it's got to be something with the alcohol coming from the radiator. Either there shouldn't be alcohol there, or the smell would not be smellable.
Yes. Let's lock in
sure.
Something's up with the radiator.
I really feel like these mini mysteries usually are either like we already know it immediately when we're done reading, or we fumble our way through for a good amount of time. All right, here's what we got. It was not uncommon for bootleggers to distill moonshine in their car radiators. Mr. Collins is showing off. Not even a prohibition agent would use alcohol in an automobile radiator in or about Miami.
What? What? Why would... What? I don't... Wait, who's lying? Was Sneaky Joe lying, or was the was Collins, witty guy, lying?
I'm not sure. The quote is from Washington Irving, and it just says, "The oil and wine of merry meeting."
What?
Okay. Maybe our listeners can help us with this. It says, "It was not uncommon for bootleggers to distill moonshine in their car radiators."
Okay,
Mr. Collins
sure.
is showing off. Not even a prohibition agent would use alcohol in an automobile radiator in or about Miami.
Why is Miami important? Are they talking about like you distill moonshine in like a house radiator and you wouldn't do it in alcohol? You wouldn't do it in a car radiator. That's just dumb. So he lied to... Why did he
What does
tell
it mean
this?
Mr. Collins is showing off? What does that mean in this context? It's saying that he... Here's
he
the thing.
Dummy.
It's saying... Basically, it's saying it's common for bootleggers to distill moonshine in car radiators, but he would not use alcohol in an automobile in or about Miami. What's up with that? What does that mean?
Ah, obviously.
I really think our inexpertise with this subject is showing yet again.
Dang, but we had a whole moon exhibit about moonshine.
Yeah, that does make us experts, you're right.
Dang.
Well maybe I can... I went to the older book to see if it's different, and it has less information.
What's it say in the old one?
In the old one, it says, not even a prohibition agent would use alcohol in an automobile radiator in or about Miami.
Why is Miami so important?
Oh, man. All right. Yeah, we're gonna need some help on this one. Detectives out there, please let us know what we're missing here.
Yeah.
Well, with that stumped energy, can move into... Man, most of them have been good. I thought that this one would be updated enough that we wouldn't run into things that felt like they were, you know, antiquated. But
alas.
C'est la vie. Okay, Nathan, should we switch to our story?
I'm ready.
Okay, SpongeBob. You wake up in the dead of night. Your dreams have gotten stranger since you discovered the murder museum. Every character is a suspect. Every story is an alibi. Every moment approaches the inevitable murder at the center of it all. You rub your eyes and reach over to turn on your lamp, but your hand touches something hairy. You sit up startled and fumble again for the lamp. This time you find it, and next to it there's a scrap of paper that wasn't there this morning. It's a note, and it reads, "Nathan, I found an experience that I think you'll enjoy. No favors or tricks. Just a good time. A friend of mine will unlock the east side door for you. Hunt the hunters, Grassman.
What? He got into my house!
In the soft blue light of dawn, you arrive at the murder museum. With some effort, you find the east side door. It feels like this door is not meant to be easily accessible. You had to weave between bushes and shrubs to get here, and there's a foreboding sign on the door. Curator entrance only. Trespassers will be prosecuted.
Oh no.
The words on the sign get fuzzy for a second, and then they start to shift, as if they're melting away, and they reform a new message. More of a suggestion, really. Go on.
Oh, I'm opening that door.
And it is very unlocked. For a moment, you feel like you hear some rustling in the bushes behind you, but in you go. And as you step in, you actually walk down a set of concrete steps into a large room that just doesn't look like a museum. It looks like a messy attic, but the size of a warehouse. Heaps of bizarre objects are crisscrossed by narrow walkways. Think like the Room of Requirement in Harry Potter. Now that you're inside, you realize you don't have directions for this part. You recheck your note and, oh, there are directions on here. Left, right, 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 left. And so, okay. You follow the path. You end up at a pile with a red book with golden ornamentation on top. You can't see a title. There's a slip of paper taped to the front of the book. It's a form with handwritten notes. It says the following. MDTA signifier, WINN 13. E output, minimal. Defunct as of 9th of June 2013. Notes, not worth our time. Again, the words start to swirl. And then they say, open it and say goodbye. It's a key word.
That sounds ominous, but I'm going to go ahead and do that.
Okay. You open the book, you say the word, and your vision swirls. You find yourself alone in a dense forest. For a moment, it feels like you've exited the museum, but the trees look different here. No one else is around.
Gosh. Is it day? Is it night?
It looks like it's daytime. It's a bit overcast, a little windy.
I look at the note. Has it changed at all?
You don't have a note in your pocket.
I don't have a note in my pocket anymore. Do I have a Pocket Watson in my pocket?
You do.
Ha! Okay.
Do you open him?
I'm going to open him.
What can I assist you with? Wait. Where are you? Nathan?
Thank you for coming here. I better get going.
Nathan?
Closed.
Well, dang it, I just tattled on myself. Oh, dang. Okay, I better get going before someone comes and gets me. Is there a path? Am I just in a little clearing? I want to look around.
Yeah, it looks like a clearing. Yeah, I'll tell you a bit about what you see. The trees look mostly like oaks as opposed to the pine trees surrounding the museum. It also looks like some of the leaves are starting to change colors. So it's sometime in the fall. And as you look around, it does look to really just be trees, but you do think you see some sort of hole cut into a tree maybe 30 to 50 yards away.
Oh, I love that. We're going to go and investigate the mysterious hole.
Okay, you go over and it's this square hole filled up with a glass pane. It looks kind of like a window.
Oh. Is this a little treehouse?
It's a big tree.
Can I peer through it?
Yes. As you look through it, you see a small interior and you see a small pink form huddled over, covering their eyes.
Am I in the Hundred Acre Woods right now? Can I find a door or can I knock on the glass?
There is a door and you knock on it. And out pops Piglet.
Oh my gosh.
Yes! Who says, You found me. Now you get to be the hider. I'll start counting.
Okay. Okay.
C-Y-M-E-E-Y-Q-Y-B-K-Y-N-Q-M-S-Y-D-S-F-M-L.